Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Thinking Like a Bank, where we show you how to think like a bank using the same strategies and principles that banks use to help you find more financial freedom in your life. I'm your host, Sarah Ibrahim. And so for some of the core principles we've talked about of thinking like a bank include investing in real estate, saving on taxes, having safe and predictable income. And I wanted to touch on two of those things today. It's investing in real estate and saving on taxes. And these two kind of having a compounding effect with each other. And one of those methods that real estate investors use to save a lot on taxes, or if they know about, is called cost segregation. Now, this is something I know nothing about, but I wanted to bring an expert who does. His name is Yona Weiss. Yona is a powerhouse with Property Owners Tax Savings. As business director at Madison Specs, a national cost segregation leader, he has assisted clients in saving tens of millions of dollars on taxes through cost segregation. He has a background in teaching and a passion for real estate and helping others. He's a real estate investor and host of the top podcast, Weiss Advice. Yona, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sari. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate you inviting me and happy to be joining you to share a little of this knowledge about cost segregation.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. And this is probably what, like your 1,000th guest appearance on a podcast?
I'm not that old. I mean, come on. I know the white hairs kind of make me look, but no, I've been a guest probably around 200 different podcasts at this point.
Nice. Thank you for joining us.
Stop counting.
Good. Before we jump into what cost segregation is, do you mind sharing with us some of your background?
Sure. I mean, as you mentioned, I have a background in teaching. I really spent about 15 years as a teacher in various different roles, and it's really been my passion. I have a big family, 6 kids, and I've always been loved teaching and just kind of learning. Really, I'm a student, and that's really good teachers are really good students because they're constantly learning so that they can then learn in order to teach, in order to help others understand the same things that they're learning. So I got really excited about real estate about 5-6 years ago or so when I was just looking for something else. I was looking for a little extra income, little extra opportunities on top of the teaching, and came across real estate, really bigger pockets, and some of my friends who were doing different things, fix and flips, and just started talking to everyone that I knew about it. And I really got the bug, so to speak. And that's kind of led me down an interesting path where I've been involved in many different roles, from being a mortgage broker to a real, residential real estate broker, agent, and fix and flipping a few houses. And, now investing in real estate as well, multifamily properties, as well as, finding this incredible company, Madison Specs, that I work for. And I continue this role in teaching, really just helping people save taxes by really understanding what cost segregation is.
Oh, wow. So okay. It's a pretty extensive, awesome background.
Yeah, it's been a lot. It's been a long journey, and it's really continuing. I'm really still at the beginning in a lot of senses.
Nice. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. So what exactly is cost segregation?
It's a really weird name, right? But essentially all it is an advanced form of depreciation. Okay, so depreciation is a tax deduction. That's what it is. When you buy a property, the IRS allows you to take this tax deduction to help lower your income tax liability. So if you make, if you buy a property for $1 million, let's say, you get to now take that entire $1 million, subtract a little bit for land, and then with the remaining amount, you literally get to take as a tax write-off, okay? You get to subtract the entire amount. However, it's over a long period of time. For commercial properties, it's over a 39-year period. You divide that $1 million up, and you get about $20,000 a year as a tax deduction. For residential properties, including multifamily, it's 27 and a half years. So you get to divide that up, right? $1 million by 27 and a half, about $30,000 a year. And so I'm just rounding the numbers, but essentially you get the point. You're getting a tax write-off, a deduction from your income taxes that lowers your taxable income. So that's depreciation. And so cost segregation is just kind of a way to segregate that cost, right? Mm-hmm. What that means is to putting it into different buckets, meaning finding things in the property that actually depreciate at a faster rate. And you can now take those assets and depreciate them faster, meaning take the tax value of those things as a tax deduction over, in a year or 5 years or 15 years, as opposed to waiting 39 years.
Okay. And this is more of like an engineering thing, right?
It is. So even though it is, you know, we're talking about taxes, we're talking about accounting, it requires an engineering component because the engineer actually has to come to a property and analyze what all those little things are, what each detail and component of the building can now be put in these different categories. So instead of, you know, just kind of lumping everything together, when you buy a property, you don't know exactly how much, you know, of that entire $1 million goes into the carpeting and into, you know, the cabinets or into the fixtures. Because in the end of the day, what's happening is if you're building a property from scratch, you know exactly how much was spent because you have invoices, you know, it was spent. That's much easier to figure out where all the depreciation goes. But when you're buying a property that was built 10 years ago, your depreciation starts the day you buy the property and it's based on your purchase price. So kind of, it's relative. And so mm-hmm. now you need to kind of go and reverse engineer and figure out how much each individual asset is worth so you can depreciate it starting today.
Okay, that makes sense. I see that. That's where, you know, the name cost segregation comes in. You're kind of separating parts of the structure of the building, excluding the land, and then calculating the depreciation. And it's more of an advanced form. So you're kind of finding like future money to use for real estate investing or for other things you want to use.
Exactly. I mean, you're able to take those tax deductions. If you're allowed to take tax deductions, like why not take it? Because paying less taxes legally mm-hmm. is actually probably the biggest way you can advance your real estate investing.
Yeah. And you've mentioned this on the other shows, the IRS wrote these laws, Congress wrote these laws. So we should take mm-hmm. advantage of, you know, the government wants us to utilize these, and you're better off using these as a real estate investor to use these within your portfolio rather than just paying it to the government and then having it sit in the government's, you know, bank account.
Exactly. I mean, unless you actually believe that the government is going to spend your own money better than you do, I would take advantage of using your own money mm-hmm. to spend it and invest it and make more money that way.
Okay. Nice. So is this a common thing, cost segregation?
Well, you know, it's a hard question to answer. Is it common? It is something that is open and available for anyone to utilize. In fact, like you mentioned, IRS wrote these rules, so you can do it. But I would say, unfortunately, you know, in my experience, a very small percentage of property owners actually are utilizing it, actually know about it and are utilizing it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's not just like, for example, if a CPA is also like, do they recommend this? Or because it's not just a CPA component, it's also a CPA plus like a cost segregation expert. You need both, right?
So it's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's funny because most CPAs aren't real estate focused, mm-hmm. I would say. So they're, you know, it's kind of a category unto itself, like real estate savvy, real estate specializing CPAs. And obviously they're going to go out of their way to tell you and be proactive to tell you about these type of deductions. Whereas an other CPA probably wouldn't. And they're just not proactive enough in many cases to go ahead and tell you what your potential, you know, tax savings, different strategies and things like this. So it is something that is specialized. It is something you need to have, you know, someone like our firm come out and do the actual study, because of all the accounting firms in the country, there's only a small handful that actually do cost segregation in-house. Okay. Mm-hmm. The largest accounting firms, they're doing it in-house because they have, you know, the clientele to pay for the engineers that they have on staff to keep it going, right? Mm-hmm. But besides them, 99% of accountants do not do this in-house, and you need to find a third-party firm that's this engineering firm that does specializes in cost segregation.
Okay. And then do you guys help clients all over the country in all 50 states?
We do. Yeah. So Madison Specs, we're actually the largest national company working in all 50 states.
Okay. Well, do you mind sharing with us an example, like a recent project you've worked on where it costs X amount of dollars and you've saved X amount of dollars for the owners?
Sure. I mean, it's pretty simple. I would say it's on average multifamily properties, and I'll use that example because it is pretty common. People like to invest in that, especially people listening to podcasts, mm-hmm. but it can be done for any type of property, commercial, you know, retail, office, self-storage, industrial, you name it, any type of property. Besides for your personal residence, any property whatsoever that you own as a business or as an investment property, rental property, you can do cost segregation on. So I'll just give a quick, simple example, round numbers, keep it easy. So let's take an example of $1 million property. And I'm using this as, it's not a specific case study because we do thousands of these. So I don't want to like, you know, pinpoint something. I just want to keep something simple with round numbers so you can conceptualize this and then make the, you know, divide or subtract or, you know, multiply depending on your own personal purchase price. But the fee to get this done is pretty similar regardless of the size and type of property, because it's one time flat fee that's done it involves the scope of work involved and not necessarily your tax savings. So let's take an example of $1 million property. Okay. Buy $1 million multifamily property, depending on where in the country it is going to depend on how many units are actually in that, right? If it's in California, it's probably 2 units. if it's, you know, in Alabama or something, you could probably get a 30, 40 unit property for $1 million. And what you would do is always subtract a certain amount for the land. So let's take 15%, because that's a pretty average. I found the national average to be 15% for land. Land does not depreciate. So what we're left with is what's called the building. And what we're doing with the building is breaking it down into three different categories. So you're left with $850,000, three different categories: the building, which is structural components. And so that's made up of things our engineers are going to identify and give value to, things like the roof, walls, floor, you know, foundation, windows, doors. These things are structural and all of them have a value to them. Then you'll have 15-year schedule, okay? And that's consists of stuff like landscaping or fencing or pavement, if you have a parking lot or a driveway, things like that, signage outside the building, storm water drain, you know, those kind of things, anything outside the building, all that depreciates on a 15-year schedule. And then you have the third category, which is personal property or tangible property. And that consists of anything that's inside the building that's not structural. So that can be appliances, furniture, even carpeting and cabinets or fixtures, you know, window treatments, millwork, all that stuff. So I'm just giving you a breakdown of what all this is going to consist of. So in our $1 million property, we're taking, you know, $850,000. That's our, what's called our tax basis. And that's the amount you can depreciate overall. If you were not to do cost segregation, just to give you a, you know, kind of a comparison, you'd be taking approximately $30,000, right? Take 850, divide it by 27.5. You have approximately $30,000 of tax deductions each year. That would be called straight line regular depreciation. So how that's going to work, let's say your $1 million property is producing $50,000 in net operating income. Okay, so you're making 50 grand, right, from this property, collecting your rent every month, right, after mortgage, after paying all your expenses, you're left with 50,000. You're going to be taxed on that 50,000, but the first thing you do is subtract 30,000 from that. That's your depreciation deduction, and you're left paying taxes only on the remaining 20,000. So that's how real estate depreciation works. Comes in cost segregation, and again, you can multiply these numbers or divide them depending on your type of property, and we're going to come and say, well, you know what, the 15-year property, let's say it's going to be, you know, 5% of the overall property is going to be put into that. Okay. So that's going to get you, you know, quite a significant amount, maybe about extra $40,000 or so, right? And 5-year property, that's going to get you about 20% of the overall property, right? So you're looking at, you know, extra $160,000-$170,000 of depreciation over the first 5 years. Again, 5-year property, personal property, you can take the deduction of those things over 5 years. So altogether, in the first 5 years, you're looking at an extra $180,000 or so of depreciation, all right? Divide that by, you know, five, you're getting an extra, we'll just do the numbers there, you're getting an extra 36,000 or so, basically doubling, more than doubling your depreciation deduction over those first 5 years. So instead of paying taxes on the $20,000 each year, you're going to pay zero taxes because you have totally wiped out your taxable liability. And so that's saving, you know, quite a bit of money each year. And so that's kind of how depreciation works. And take this on a $10 million property, multiply it by 10, you know, you're getting instead of paying $200,000 taxes on that, you're paying zero taxes. So again, the more the property is, the more benefit there's going to be.
Okay. Now, what if it's like a syndication, like multiple investors? Would it be the fund that saves the income tax, or would it be each investor, or would it be like a combination of both?
It really depends on how the syndication is structured, and how the investors own their shares in the real estate. Most cases that I've seen are that, you know, passive limited partner investors are getting a certain shares of equity in the property, meaning they actually own a piece of the property. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty typical for equity investors. What that means is they will get, based on their percentage of ownership, they will get the percentage of that depreciation, meaning the depreciation is given to the property and, you know, the LLC or the corporation, whatever, that owns the property, and then it's going to be divided up according to the percentage of ownership. So if you invest $100,000 in a syndication and that gives you a 5% ownership, let's say, of a property, so you're going to get your returns, your, mm-hmm. you know, the income, and you're going to get 5% of the overall total depreciation.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay, cool. Now, you know, this sounds really, you know, fascinating, obviously. Are there any downsides to this or things to be aware of when you're doing cost segregation study?
Absolutely. There's definitely downsides. There's definitely things to be aware of. Like any tax strategy, it's only going to work if it works for you. Okay. And so this is something that you should definitely discuss with your accountant, make sure it fits with your personal, your specific situation. One of the times where it's really not going to be a good idea is, number one, if you don't actually have any income, if you don't have income to offset, then it doesn't make sense to get extra deductions because this is not going to create a tax refund. Okay, that's the one thing it's not going to do. When you get more deductions from depreciation, it creates something called a passive loss. And so it doesn't go away, but you can't necessarily utilize it in the current year. It just carries forward. You can use it in future years. So that's one thing to be aware of. Figure out, you know, does this make sense? Can I use this? And that's the first thing. Second, you know, case where it might not make sense is if you're holding a property for a short period of time, meaning a year or 2 years. Because what happens is when you sell a property, you are subject to what's called depreciation recapture tax. And so this is a tax that you are, you know, subject to on the sale of a property, just like you're taxed on capital gains, meaning if you made a profit on the sale, you have to pay a capital gains tax on that amount of profit you made. So too, the depreciation that you've taken is something called unrealized gain, which means you have gained from that because you have reduced your taxes over the years of ownership. And now when you sell it, it is similar to a capital gain because you've actually made money by not having to pay those taxes. You now have to pay a tax on that amount. Now, there are many ways to get around that. So I'm not going to say that it's, you know, all something you need to be aware of, just like capital gains. It's something that you can get around, right? It is a tax you are subject to, but there are strategies and other ways that you can use to reduce that. So just like buying a property, you can say, would you buy this property? Well, why would you buy it? Because if when you sell it, you're going to have to pay capital gains tax on it. No, that's not a reason not to buy it, mm-hmm. right? It's yeah. it's or not to make money on it, right? Mm-hmm. Don't sell it at such a profit because you're just going to pay you know, taxes on that profit. No, mm-hmm. because there are obviously strategies and ways to get around. And if doing it right, real estate can actually be such a wealth building tool that in many cases, and I've literally seen this for all the years I've been involved in real estate, people who are constantly buying properties are not paying any income tax legally. So mm-hmm. that, you know, regardless if they're buying and selling, they find more deductions from depreciation from one property to use to offset their income and offset recapture tax and capital gains tax as well on the sale of other properties. So there's definitely strategies to be used.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I like that. Definitely. There's a lot of strategies and you mentioned about the 1031 exchange. So sometimes like if you're in the meantime of purchasing a new property and kind of on the hook for the 1030 for the taxes, there are some companies that help with like holding your funds in the meantime. Is that something that Madison Specs does until you find a new property to avoid the capital gains tax?
Yeah. So we are actually, Madison Specs is kind of one company under an umbrella of group of companies. So we have another sister company called Madison 1031. So we are a 1031 exchange qualified intermediary. Okay. So that's something that if you want to do a 1031 exchange, you actually have to go through a qualified intermediary. And like you said, they will hold the funds in an escrow account so that you can and file the proper forms with the IRS to make sure that it's done legally and following all of the rules. There's a limited number of days that you have to identify properties and then another limited time that you have to then close on those property or one of the properties, and only certain types of properties can be bought and or sold. And there's a lot of other rules that go along with it. So obviously if you're doing it, make sure you're doing it right and mm-hmm. a proper way.
Okay. Now I know as far as cost segregation, that applies to income taxes. Now, one thing I hear from a lot of my clients and people that I network with is they kind of complain about property taxes. Now, since you guys are already serving the properties, you know a lot about the properties already. Is this something that Madison Specs can also help with, trying to kind of lower the property tax liability for owners?
Yeah. So unfortunately, property tax is something that really hurts. If you're not, you know, depending on where it's located and when you buy a new property, usually the county is going to assess it, reassess it, and then give a higher tax rate for your property taxes. That currently is not something that we do because it is really hyper local. Each county in the country has different, different rules and standards of how they can do that. But there are specialists out there. I do know a couple that I work with in different locations throughout the country that kind of help with that. So if you have a property and you're looking to try to get your property taxes down or reassessed so that you can pay less property taxes, I know some people that I kind of refer out to when that comes out.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate all this knowledge you've shared with us. I want to kind of talk about you a little bit more. You've been you're obviously an expert, not only on cost segregation, but also at showing people that you're an expert at cost segregation. You've got marketing it, you're all over YouTube, all over LinkedIn. You're sharing, what are some tips you have for professionals who need to network or meet with more people online?
You know, the best thing is, social media, as you know, is just an incredible tool. It can, when used right and used properly, it can open up doors that you never knew even existed. And I think the importance of networking properly, whether in person or online, has to be done with tact. Okay. And when I say with tact, there's certain etiquette, there's certain things that you do, things you shouldn't do. And so networking is really about building relationships, and it does not come by trying to sell people, for example. And so one thing that I've seen a lot of people make mistakes on is they will, just think that social media is a great tool to get leads. Mm-hmm. And that is true to a certain extent, but the leads are much different than like cold leads or, a list of leads that you're going to be cold calling or mailing to that you're not really necessarily, trying to build relationships with, you're just trying to sell to. And it's a numbers game when it mm-hmm. comes to cold calling. I've done that before. It's not something I enjoy too much, but with social media and with networking, there's really an incredible way to kind of build your brand and allow people to know who you are, get to know you through your content, through your engagement, through the networking, through conversations, through, podcasting, and through, just really meeting people. Mm-hmm. That is going to create what I like to call warm leads, right? Or incoming leads. And so mm-hmm. that's something that can be done, but it is done over a very long period of time. Okay. It's not something that happens immediately. And again, when it's done with tact and is done with etiquette, it can be, open up opportunities, like I said, that you've even no idea that even exist.
Wow. Okay. Now, so with everything you're doing right now, how do you manage your time? What are some tips that you have to share about managing time?
Time management. It's a great topic, something that I need help with personally, believe it or not, a lot. I'd say one thing you need to do is create certain things in your life that are, essential. Like I need to do, just like, you need to eat, right? Mm-hmm. Every day. And we don't even think twice. Sometimes we get lost and we forget. And if we're not healthy, don't have healthy habits, but time management is really about building healthy habits. And so not just, I need to eat a certain time. I need to sleep a certain amount of time. That to, any grown person understands the importance of those essential needs. So too, when it comes to business or it comes to anything else, you need to set up time barriers or time limits and say, I need to X amount of time every day from whatever time it is, 20 minutes, half an hour. I need to pray. I need to mm-hmm. meditate. I need mm-hmm. to take time, spend with my family. I need to, do business. I need to respond to emails. I need to work on social media. And all of those things are, each one of them is going to have a time. And when you can build that, kind of build those systems, understand each thing kind of needs to fit in a box and fit in a window, you can then play around with them. And you can say, yeah, okay, maybe it doesn't have to be every single day at the same time. Like lunch doesn't necessarily need to be at every single day at the same mm-hmm. time, right? Maybe you'll make an appointment with someone to go out for lunch at 2 o'clock instead of 12 o'clock. So again, but it needs to happen, once you understand, you figure out what are those things that need to happen on a daily or weekly or et cetera basis, you can then go ahead and schedule them in, and then you can really conquer them.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Yona, it's been a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you so much for being on our show. How can listeners get in contact with you?
Best way to find me is on LinkedIn. I'm actually pretty active there. Mm-hmm. Even more active than my email. I respond to that. So check me out, posting a lot of content there. You can also go to yonaweiss.com and find out more about cost segregation there. Find out about the Weiss Advice podcast over there also, and everything else we're doing, from investing in real estate to whatever else. So that's it.
Yeah. I'll put this in the show notes too, so people can just click on the link to it, to your LinkedIn profile and your website. And I really appreciate being on the show and sharing your knowledge and your expertise, and hope to hopefully reconnect soon with you.
My pleasure, Sari. It's been awesome. Thanks so much. You're a great host. Ask wonderful questions, and I appreciate you reaching out.
Thank you. To learn more about what we do and how we can help you grow more wealth, please visit www.finassetprotection.com. That's FINassetprotection.com. The topics presented in this podcast are for general information only and not for the purposes of providing legal, accounting, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult a professional who knows your specific situation.